This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Changing Directions, Changing Lives is the name of the first ever Canadian mental health strategy. Its purpose is to help improve mental health and well-being for all people living in Canada and to create a mental health system that can truly meet the needs of people of all ages living with mental health problems and illnesses and their families. It's released on May 8, 2012, marks a significant milestone in the journey to bring mental health out of the shadows and to recognize, in both words and deeds, the truth of the saying that there can be no health without mental health. But will governments provide the resources needed to make recommended changes? And what roles do communities, charitable organizations, and individuals have to play in its implementation? We're joined on the phone by Howard Chodos, one of the authors of the strategy.
Welcome to People First Radio, Howard.
Thanks very much for inviting me, Kevin.
The strategy document states very clearly and plainly, Canada needed a plan to improve a system that is not working well. Tell us more about why this national mental health strategy was needed.
Well, I think any of your listeners who have had to deal with the mental health system will realize that in many ways we don't really have a system at all, that it's much more often what people confront is a fragmented patchwork quilt of services that are often very difficult to navigate. To the point where one of the most, I think, shocking statistics that we relate in the strategy is that around two-thirds of people who could benefit from assistance in some way with mental health problems they might be experiencing do not actually have the opportunity to get access to the help that they need. And with regard to any other health condition of any kind, if that were the case, where two-thirds of the people were not getting assistance when they needed it, we would be up in arms and it would be considered to be a scandal. But it's been so long that people have accepted that mental health can be neglected, that people living with mental health problems and mental illnesses can in many ways be treated as second-class citizens, that we haven't managed yet to create a system that can actually serve people's needs. And at the same time that we don't meet people's needs, we also don't pay enough attention to health and wellness for the population as a whole, whether or not people are experiencing any significant mental health problems.
The strategy was developed in two distinct phases, and I believe there was a report that you had a part to play in that preceded this strategy document. Tell us more about the process itself.
Yeah, well, we've actually been at it for close to 4 years, since around the time when the Mental Health Commission was created. And if you want to date it back even a little bit further than that, there was the first ever national report was conducted by the Senate Committee on Social Affairs, Science and Technology, that Michael Kirby was the chair at the time, and I had the privilege of being the lead author of that study as well, and that appeared in 2006. But when we got started, when the commission was created in 2007, a central part of our mandate was to create a mental health strategy. But given that this was the first time that this was ever being done in Canada, we thought that it would be best to take a step back and to consult people across the country on what their vision for a well-functioning, transformed mental health system would look like. So we spent close to a couple of years crisscrossing the country and trying to paint a picture of what it is that we wanted. We figured we needed to set ourselves a target before thinking about what types of actions needed to be done, that we needed to bring people together and try to create as much agreement as possible on the big broad goals before we actually tackled the difficult issues relating to how to get there. So that was what we called the first phase, and there was a document in 2009 called Toward Recovery and Well-Being that we published that did that, that set out a vision and seven broad goals for a transformed mental health system. And the work that we've just completed now with the release of the Mental Health Strategy for Canada, Changing Directions, Changing Lives, is to look at what types of action can need to be taken in order to achieve that vision. So that's why it took us so long, but we really felt that it was essential to try to engage as many people as possible to hear the voices of experience, both of the system and of people who have experienced mental health problems and of all the different communities across the country in order to have recommendations that reflected really the broad range of interests and concerns.
Were there any particular challenges in coming to that place of consensus? The first document reflected an emerging consensus. I take it that the strategy reflects a more solid consensus of what needs to be done. Were there some challenges along the way in achieving that consensus?
Well, as you know, the mental health field is a very, very complex one. There are numerous challenges that we confronted. I think one was at the level of the jurisdictional issues, if you will, the complicated way that we deal with healthcare in our country, where most of it is provincial and yet and territorial, and yet the federal government also plays a big role. And the Mental Health Commission itself is an independent body, so we're not really part of government, and yet we were given the task of trying to tell government how they could make things better in the mental health field. But we can try to tell them, but we don't have the power to force them to do it. So we have to find an approach and the language and the types of recommendations that could be adaptable to all the different circumstances across the country. It had to be as relevant to people in PEI and Nunavut as to folks in Vancouver and Vancouver Island. So that was, if you will, probably the central challenge we faced is how to both craft recommendations for change that were serious, that were real, that were going to give people a real idea of what needed to be done, but at the same time recognizing that we had to make it flexible enough for people to be able to choose the priorities that were most relevant to their regions. And then there was the question of just balancing all the many different dimensions and making sure that we adequately reflected the needs of people with the most serious mental illnesses at the same time that we also addressed those that affect large numbers of people, but that sometimes don't require as much support for people to get better. So it was finding many different ways of balancing across all these different areas. And just to mention one more, balancing the importance of mental health promotion, which often gets even short shrift when dollars are concerned and there are immediate urgent needs for care. We sometimes forget that we're not going to solve this problem unless we actually pay attention to promoting mental health and preventing mental illness wherever we can.
The issue of stigma is directly addressed in the strategy, and the problem of stigma seems to be located very centrally in the challenges faced here. Tell us a bit more about the impacts of stigma.
Going back to the time that I was working on the Senate committee report, I think one of the testimony from one of the witnesses, I think it was in St. John's, a young woman who appeared before the committee and told her story. She was both a breast cancer survivor and someone who had experienced severe depression. And she told everyone in the room and people's eyes, it was high. It was a very emotional testimony saying that because of the stigma, her experience with depression was much, much worse, and if she had to choose between the two, she would choose cancer over depression. And that was something that has stuck with me to this day, and I think it does speak to the fact that many people told us that the stigma that they have faced is often as devastating to them as the experience of the illness or a mental health problem itself. And I think we've made a lot of progress. I think there's a lot of attention in the media recently to mental health issues, and I think that's really a positive development, but there's still a long, long way to go, and stigma affects every aspect of the mental health system. And I think it's part of the reason when I spoke earlier about two-thirds of people not getting the help that they need, very often it's because of the stigmatization of the illness. People either don't know that they should be looking for help or are afraid or ashamed to actually seek help that would be a benefit to them. So I think it remains pervasive and remains something that has really dramatic impact on people's lives.
This is CHLY.ca, CHLY 101.7 FM. You're listening to People First Radio.
Drawing on the best available evidence and on input from thousands of people across Canada, a new national mental health strategy has translated vision into recommendations for action. Changing Directions, Changing Lives was developed with the input and testimony of thousands of people living with mental health problems and illnesses who shared their personal experiences and the many obstacles they face in obtaining help and support from an underfunded and fragmented mental health system. Family members shared the many challenges that they also confront, and service providers, researchers, and policy experts added their voices to the chorus calling for much-needed change. The scope of the first-ever mental health strategy, which is called Changing Directions, Changing Lives, is broad, and its recommendations are grouped into six key strategic directions. Each strategic direction focuses on one critical dimension, and together they combine to provide a comprehensive blueprint for change. We're speaking with Howard Chodos, who is a special advisor to the Mental Health Commission of Canada and one of the authors of the strategy.
Howard, tell us a little bit more about each of the six strategic directions in the strategy.
Sure. As was just said, we set out to craft a document that was as comprehensive as we could make it. So it is a big document. It's got 109 recommendations for action in all, and these are indeed grouped under six different strategic directions. We begin the document looking at promotion of mental health and the prevention of mental illness. I think, as I mentioned, we'll never be able to really dramatically reduce the impact of mental health problems and illnesses on people's lives unless we can also help them to take care of their mental health and do whatever they can to be protected against the onset of mental illness. Our second strategic direction is sort of the philosophical underpinning of our whole approach to caring and treating and helping people to recover from mental illness. Its focus is on recovery and the rights of people living with mental health problems and illnesses. From the beginning, the Mental Health Commission, following the lead of the Senate committee, decided that recovery had to be at the center of mental health reform, and recovery in the sense of encouraging everybody to hope and expect to be able to improve their mental health and well-being, to be able to live the lives that they would like to live in the communities of their choice, regardless of the symptoms of mental health problems that they might be experiencing. And in order to do that, of course, they have to be able to be sure that they're going to benefit from the right to fully participate in every aspect of social life, to be able to be accommodated at the workplace, to be able to support it in pursuing educational goals, and when they can't work, to be able to be supported adequately with an income that allows them to take care of their mental health, to recover, and to become fully participating members of society. Our third strategic direction is focused on the whole range of services, supports, and treatments that people need, and looking at ways that we can provide better access to an integrated and to integrate the system better so that it can meet people's needs in as seamless and integrated a way as possible. And this means starting from the primary healthcare system, family doctors, and so on, who see up to 80% of people who have mental health problems, moving through the community mental health system, which has been inadequately resourced for as long, I think, as anyone can remember, as well as setting benchmarks for people with serious mental health problems to make sure that they get access to the kinds of treatments and care and medication that they need in order to be able to take care of themselves and embark on a journey of recovery. But it also looks at other dimensions, a job, a friend, and a home. We put a great emphasis on the importance of peer support and making sure that people who have the lived experience of mental health problems can contribute to helping others and making this an integral feature of our system. And then making sure that people are supported as best we can with access to adequate housing, to education, and to income when they need it. We've got two strategic directions that look at different communities that face particular challenges, but also have particular contributions to make. The first strategic direction 4 looks at disparities in health outcomes, disparities in access to services, and in particular, people, newcomers to Canada, people living in the north and remote regions, people who need access to services in the language of their choice, and the ways in which gender and sexuality can affect the impact of mental health problems on people. And then we have a whole strategic direction that's devoted to First Nations, Inuit, and Métis. And we felt that we couldn't have a strategy for Canada that did not address adequately both the important needs that many of these communities have with respect to the conditions that they face to be able to better take care of their mental health, but also recognizing that we have a lot to learn from the ways in which they have been resilient in the face of adversity and have long lived by approaches to mental health and well-being that are more holistic than many of us have learned in the past. So that it's not just a strategic direction that's focused on providing the kinds of services, but making sure that communities themselves are able to address their mental health needs, and that we combine the best of traditional approaches with the best of clinical approaches in order to better meet the needs of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people right across the country. And then the final strategic direction tries to tie it all together and puts a great emphasis on the importance of leadership and building the infrastructure, if you will, for us to be able to sustain change over time. Mental health is much, much more than just a health issue, and governments need to realize that and take a whole of government approach, recognize that they've got to look at how mental health is affected by social policy, by education, by the criminal justice system, and so on, and that unless we have that overview and that integrated approach, we'll never be able to fully address mental health problems.
Dr. Choros, in the introduction to this discussion, we asked two questions. Will governments provide the resources needed to make recommended changes? And what roles do communities, charitable organizations, and individuals have to play in its implementation? What are your brief thoughts on these questions?
Well, I'm sure as everyone appreciates, we had the, if you will, a bit of misfortune in the timing of the release of our report. It would be much nicer if the country were living at a time when governments were flush with cash and were able to invest more. We make the point very strongly that more money is needed, but we also insist on the fact that more can be done with the resources that are already there. I guess cautiously hopeful that governments will invest. Nova Scotia, for example, just released its mental health strategy this past week and had over $5 million devoted to it at a time of austerity elsewhere. So I think there is a recognition that mental health has been neglected for so long, and then perhaps even as governments are cutting in other areas, this is an area that they need to think of very seriously as an investment in our collective future, and that will pay back in the long run in terms of health benefits to thousands, but also to the economic prosperity of the country. And our strategy from the start was not only directed to government, but was intended to reach out to everybody who is affected by mental health problems, and that is just about every single family and every single person in this country in one way or another. So we hope that there are elements of the strategy that everybody can identify with and look to ways improve the approach to mental health, to work with programs in schools, at the workplace, to advocate for change in general, to fight discriminatory attitudes. There's a role for everyone in this, and we know that unless there is public pressure, that it'll be very easy for governments to ignore the recommendations and for our report to sit on the shelves. And we really hope that there's enough in it to inspire people to take action around mental health so that that doesn't happen.
Howard Choros, thank you very much for taking the time and providing this very helpful overview of the strategy.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
Howard Chodos was the first person employed by the Mental Health Commission of Canada and helped to get the commission up and running following its creation by the Government of Canada in March 2007. Dr. Chodos is one of the authors of Canada's first ever national mental health strategy. It's called Changing Directions, Changing Lives. And the strategy documents can be found online at mentalhealthcommission.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.